Good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is Veronica Entwistle, and you are listening to Paradigm Shifters. And Paradigm Shifters are, from my perspective, people who are making a difference at this time in history, in the whole collective on the planet. That means shifting our limitations, our ability to think and perceive beyond the norm, so we can evolve. My paradigm shifter is Randy Masters. He was actually the first paradigm shifter that ever came on, weren't you?
Yeah, thank you.
And Randy, I gave the wrong website. Randy's website is universalsong.net. And Randy is a master of sound healing, the ancient sounds, modern sounds, and the technology of sound, plus sacred geometrics and who knows what else, sense. I just can't even. Just welcome to the show, Randy. There's so much
you
can talk about.
Thank you, Veronica.
Yeah. How's it going in the sound healing business? What have you been doing lately? Last time you were on, you played some wonderful things for us.
I have some more. I've been making more chimes and different kinds of tuning forks and working with acupuncturists to, not only acupuncturists, but working with acupuncturists a lot to use tuning forks in addition to or in place of needles in their work. And that's
really?
Yeah, that's really fun.
Is that effective?
Very. Hmm. Extremely.
Really? So what else are you doing? You're also creating some original music, aren't you?
I'm starting to record my compositions again after many, many years. Taking a break to dive into the sound healing arena and not be performing and recording.
But your compositions also have the light, do they not? I mean, don't they have an impact?
Yeah, the idea, yes, they do. They probably mostly did throughout my career, but I'm more clear about what it is that I'm doing with it.
Because you're really conscious of the various tones and what they actually do.
And more conscious intentions versus, you know, sort of a fuzzy idea of what you want and playing. But the clearer I am about what I want to achieve, the more I change the ingredients in the mix.
That's interesting, because somebody said, do you think that we're trying to be demanding and drive the mind of God? Somebody said that in the show just before this.
Well, I think there's a pressure to step up to the plate, so to speak, and do the work we incarnated to do, or were born to do. And so I feel that spiritual pressure is like a condensation that out of that, a lot of different creativity comes. And also it has us have a lot more spiritual heat to produce what we're talking about, walk the talk of what we're talking about, show up in a way that the combination of things that we put together through our unique signature is producing the kinds of results that are intended. Good results, I mean, not just results.
Did you always have the intention to... I mean, when did the healing intention come up in your consciousness?
In the 70s, early 70s, when I started teaching music at the university, teaching songwriting and world music and jazz music. I wanted good things to happen from the music, in addition to the entertaining and the intellectual content and the fun. And
would you say it was part of the 60s?
Yeah, I had more fun, and I had a lot of fun in the 60s.
Oh, you're not the only one.
Yeah, I enjoyed the 60s. I played rock music and jazz music and blues and world music and Brazilian music. I had a great time doing all that. But I was so much into the music, the joy of it. Emotionally, I would say the light was there at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't as aware of the structures and the frequencies of different things in the universe and like that. I was just more into the music.
Tell me
which
this.
Which is okay, you know.
I mean,
it's not
perfect.
Like you need all that intellectual content to do what you need to do.
But you know what, Randy? I was watching an ancient DVD of Woodstock, and it was funny. I just saw it recently, you know. And it was so funny because I realized vibrationally that, for example, when Jimi Hendrix stood up, I went, he cracked us as if we have vibrational membranes in our consciousness or in the collective. He cracked it. I had never seen it quite as vividly, and you know what I mean, this actual function of that wild music of the 60s literally broke us open to become more able to fulfill. That's what I think. Is that what you think, or do you have a different interpretation?
I think there's a lot of musicians who, throughout music history, who have had that function. I'd heard that the 12-tone 20th century avant-garde classical music, you might say classical, not really classical, that certain composers had done had, like Schoenberg and others, had patterns in them to break up the thought fields from World War II.
Well, now this is very exciting to talk about.
No, I didn't enjoy that music. I found it interesting to analyze it in music classes and talk about certain thoughts as a composer, what was happening. But I didn't enjoy putting the music on and sharing it with people and listening to it. Emotionally, melodically, hardly anything, actually.
So do you think humanity has devised devised music in order to shift the collective through the existence of humanity in music?
I think that's been going on all along.
Wow. Before,
you know, the world to me is made of sound and oscillations and vibrations and resonances, and music organizes that, and I believe that throughout time, musicians have tuned into aspects of the cosmic consciousness in some way and brought that through with music. And then it became more formal through the years.
Literally sent waves out into the collective.
Bach was doing it. You know, a lot of the composers, Bach had a lot of very high-level mathematics and such.
Really?
Debussy was working with, connecting with the nature element.
Hmm.
Now, I'm right now just speaking of some Western classical tradition, you might say, European and such composers, because they're well-known and they're very famous in that way, as opposed to saying the same thing about certain cultures. I could. But Debussy worked a lot, like Prelude to the Afternoon of a Faun and La Mer and pieces like that, that connected with the ocean element and the water element and the divas and various things like that. And that's, I was extremely drawn to his music. I've incorporated many things from his thought processes as a composer into my own music as well.
And do you think that's because your own, your own inner resonance, your own Randy Masters, only one in the universe's resonance, is very aligned with his? Is that the way it works, Randy?
Yeah, I think we resonate with different people for various reasons. I mean, there's certainly people who did or did not resonate with Jimi Hendrix.
I didn't. It's just I had never seen it so graphically. You know, it took 25 years for me to look at it and go, oh, wow, look what he did. He just went crack and broke open stuff, you know.
Yeah. Gil Evans, the famous arranger, composer that worked with Miles Davis on big projects, did a whole album of Jimi Hendrix pieces.
He did?
With like a jazz orchestra. Be interesting, though, to compare those pieces and look at, is there anything in those arrangements that would still crack open something? Of course, it's a different time in history.
Oh, it's a very different time, but I think we got cracked open in the 60s. That's just my... not very educated on the sound world, but that's what I believe,
yeah.
Just because it seemed to make a difference.
Types of cracking open. I mean, are they the psychedelics and such substances that people played with and experimented with cracked open consciousness?
Yeah.
Not everybody that got cracked open went in a positive direction and took the high road of the spiritual opportunity of examining that light.
Mm-hmm.
Some people went down with whatever they were exploring.
We're broken by it.
Yeah.
Yeah, my first show today was about transitions and how difficult they can be. They can knock you down. It's the same idea, really.
So, you know, throughout history, the aware political leaders were very aware that if they wanted to have control over the kingdom, they had to get control over the music of that society.
Aha.
And, you know, the term, we hear it now, used in political speeches, it has to do with thought perceptions.
Hmm.
How people perceive things is what many people want control over. So they do that with commercials, they do it with movies and books.
Now you're implying that we could be enslaved by commercials and movies and books.
Am I? I say that. Well,
I say
one
that
must
a lot,
be
actually.
Careful what they watch. Definitely. And
oh,
the
yeah,
content
because...
and what's going on in that. They analyze some young radicals who had done quite a bit of damage and were in jail for their actions, and asked them, you know, what got you there? How did you go there? And 100% of them said it was the music they listened to.
Wow. 100%. Because music is the last thing to go in our minds. And
Hearing.
Yeah, hearing.
First thing that develops and the last to go, the first and last.
Isn't that amazing?
That
the word was made flesh. Well, let's get into What on earth are you doing? What kind of stuff are you composing? And I should have run some of that music, but I'm traveling, as you know. Sometime
You can do that. I've been taking pieces from some of my film adventures, film scores, and other jazz projects and world music and ethnic music, and writing some new music, and even taking pieces that go back maybe 20 years that I hadn't recorded, one piece that I had recorded, and doing a completely different arrangement of it. So these pieces have contemporary harmonies, ancient type of harmonies, ancient type of melodies, contemporary melodies, rhythms from all around the world.
And you're embedding, as you're devising healing frequencies by combining these different levels of...
Exactly. Through the rhythmic proportions, through the proportions and the mathematics and the melody. And this isn't a cerebral thing as I compose, even though I know what these details are. My composition process is very organic and seems spontaneous, and then you go back and look, and the patterns are there because I'm steeped in those patterns. It's in my awareness, so I just work till it feels right.
What are you playing? Are you playing? I used to play a trumpet, right?
No, right now I'm not playing anything on any of the pieces we've recorded so far. I brought in a piano, an acoustic piano, acoustic bass, drum set, all kinds of percussion, from Middle Eastern percussion, Indian percussion, African percussion, Brazilian percussion, jazz percussion. I'm blending those all in, sometimes even in the same pieces at the same time. These different rhythms and different styles of playing, like mixing tablas in with African percussion and mixing conga drums in with Middle Eastern drums, hand drums, and other drums.
Is that creating world harmony?
Yeah, that's part of my goal in world music styles, is to blend different cultural signatures together and show that we really need to be getting along, actually.
That's
and so that it gets along in the music. And
well,
always
I'm always very aware that language carries huge cultural information. I don't mean by the words expression, but the actual sound and the intonations of the words. It's just loaded with cultural base. And so I guess the music is even more so, isn't it?
Absolutely. I had a friend who produced a concert. He's Israeli and percussionist, and he worked with another Israeli oud player, Yair Dalal, who also plays violin, and two Pakistani musicians. So the four of them did a concert for peace, Israeli and Pakistani musicians.
Isn't that wonderful?
All harmonizing.
When
a lot
was
of them
that?
Knew the same songs. It was just this last year and near the end of the year. And they all knew a lot of the same songs. They played songs from Yemen and all around, all these hot political hot spots, you know. And people have gotten along. You know, that's a whole other discussion about why the conflict exists and what goes on behind the conflict. But there's a lot of desire amongst artists and musicians to say, you know, we don't all subscribe to this violence. This isn't where we're coming from. We're not angry with each other, or many different statements. And they get up there and play this beautiful music, even this. So you hear the Pakistani musicians playing Israeli pieces, you hear the Israeli musicians playing Pakistani pieces, and they all even play things from other surrounding countries and embrace it, and it's absolutely beautiful, very, very moving, one of the more moving concerts I've seen in a long time. And I worked on this recording with two of the musicians from that concert.
Wow.
Blending, the Israeli musicians, for instance. And they have a wealth of knowledge of ancient contemporary things, and they're also musicians looking for how to fuse and create fusions of the ancient and traditional with the modern. They're looking like that, as we are. So it's fantastic to work with them and work with their vibration and the codes that they contain. So when they play music, they're transmitting vibratory information from who they are.
And when people talk about how these, for example, Middle Eastern wars are so ancient, surely music goes right through that entire lineage to what answer the call or the angst that might be embedded there.
Well, some of them are playing the same songs and they all learn the same song.
Isn't that interesting?
You know, so the song was not political. I mean, they can have different lyrics and say things within the song, but the basic instrumental essence of the song, the kind of chords they played, the kind of scales that they drew from, the rhythmic patterns they played, the architecture of the piece, how the intervals moved, how the piece was put together. Those are different components.
Do they ever play like that at peace talks?
Yes, they do.
They do.
Yeah.
And
I see there's going to be a whole lot more of that type of
that
thing.
That is wonderful. So
to
tell us about
point,
some of your healing with sound. I'd like to hear more about that. You said you use it instead of acupuncture, instead of needles. You use sound.
And I'm not advocating not people not using needles. I'm just saying there's a desire on many to learn how sound can be used on acupuncture points, meridians, and such.
Hmm.
And I believe the ancients knew a lot about that. And much of that's been lost. And so it's interesting that over the last few years, many different acupuncturists who are licensed, trained, you know, from this country and from China, different ones, have gotten in touch with me. And so what I have been doing is having tuning forks made for them in the ancient Chinese tuning system.
Hmm.
All of the exact frequencies and things that were used in ancient China. And I've examined the bells, a lot of the bells that have been found that are thousands of years old, and what the frequencies of those bells are,
mm-hmm.
and what the tonal organization and the mathematical organization is. Now, I'm not saying I know what they did with those bells for a healing intent. How did they use them?
Mm-hmm.
But I know the mathematics of it, and I know a lot about what specific frequencies. And the question is, are those frequencies appropriate today, or do we need to amend them because we're in a different time, so the frequencies either need to raise up or lower or be shifted off of a different fundamental?
And how are you going to find that?
That's what we're experimenting with. We're trying mm-hmm. different things. And you know, the acupuncturists know exactly what it is when they needle certain points and how the energy flows in those meridians. They put the tuning forks on those points, and they find out which tuning forks are resonating. Are they consistent? It's quite a discovery.
Wow.
And we're, you know, going to be documenting this.
Have you had it done to you?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I've been working with tuning forks for healing purposes since the 70s.
Hmm.
Playing with things until I developed my own company to produce them and get them out to people.
Hmm.
The last class that I did in sound healing, the entire class was a sonic exploration of the Tree of Life, the Kabbalah.
Oh, wow.
And all of the tuning forks that I used, and I use other instruments too as well, like bells and some of my chimes and wind chimes. I have different ways of delivering the sound. In this particular one, this part was concentrating on tuning forks. And the tuning forks frequency were Kabbalistic numbers.
Hmm.
For instance, the Kabbalistic number for kingdom, the word Malkuth, is the number 496.
Okay.
So 496 hertz is what I made the tuning fork to.
Hmm.
So when you play that tuning fork, you're summoning up as a key in it to unlock, through the numerical correspondence, an access code into what kingdom is about within the Kabbalistic understanding. There's
uh-huh.
certain qualities. And then you play the forks. They can be placed on or around the body, and also people can tone to them and sing to them, and also visualize as they're toning, directing the sound to different places around their reality, in their body, outside of their body, in their environment. In other words, the sound follows whatever you're visualizing.
Hmm.
Sound follows thought in that type of way. So I could play a tuning fork in the room. Somebody could visualize that sound going to their big toe. Another person could visualize that on their crown chakra.
So you're saying you can send the sound where you want it or
mm-hmm.
need it.
The intent will deliver that.
Hmm.
It may feel a little bit differently than if you put the tuning fork on those points, but there's some aspect of that consciousness being carried with the sound going to those places that you're intending.
Hmm.
So I can do this with a large audience. So this is
That each person can choose.
Yeah, and I set it up so that there's a variety. And sometimes I set it up with specific, visualize the third eye, how to open up and balance the pituitary and pineal gland, things of that kind.
Hmm. Well, I want to jump back to, you were talking about the Chinese, aligning with the Chinese music structure.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking, is that so that you can go right into the historical, for example, we have these dense frequencies in our body, it's usually representative of either a pattern or illness or something, but that can deal with a lineage?
Well, yeah, there is that lineage, because that lineage in their Akashic field has the historical memory of sound being used a particular way.
Yeah.
So if you bring those sound collections back together, groups of tones that are in the same mathematics and the same formulas that they worked with,
right?
You know, then of course it would be nice to uncover what were the intent, how did they use that sound, what did they intend to do with it, how did they work it.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to discover that again unless certain manuscripts turn up insights. But it hasn't turned up enough of the kind of insights that I'm looking for. I have people looking into Chinese manuscripts and things for a certain type of insights into what they may have done or not.
I guess I'm kind of, right now talking to you, I'm kind of fixated on this thing about we have lineage recordings in our body-mind, you know.
Yeah.
Sound might be a great way, especially if you're aligned with the right kind of scale and so on.
Right.
It's a great way to enter that, even if we don't actually understand it.
And lineages that are not restricted to this life stream's understanding.
Right.
If you lived in a certain country, let's say, in some other life experience, parallel or past life, however you organize that, it's possible to hear something that triggers that. Like, I've loved music of certain cultures deeply because I love that. You know, I could think, well, maybe I lived there in another lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
But when I started composing, even at a young age, music in that cultural direction, I composed very fluently and authentically in that space. Chinese music, Japanese, Brazilian, Cuban, African, Spanish, all these different kinds of things that I got into, I feel like I've lived there. And through the music, I access a memory bank without having to go to school in every one of those styles, you might say.
So that's another way of saying what I'm after. I think
yeah.
you're right. It's like a,
yeah.
not short form, it's like a key into and bypassing the brain, the mind.
Yeah, it's in there some way.
Yeah.
And I believe we can clear up problems that we were born with.
So you use it a lot for psychological things?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And you can clear up, you know, and use it with hypnotherapy and use the sounds. Things happen to people. Sometimes they hear one sound, and what is that? And they're drawn to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I explore that, find out why they are attracted to it. Or they'll hear certain recordings of music with certain instruments, and the tones of those instruments might have even been a big part of what they were around.
Hmm.
And you hear the tone quality. I mean, Fred Bell talks about the in a lot of the Indian instruments from East India came here from the Pleiades.
Aha. Uh-huh.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, and so and a lot of their healing is in the tone quality.
Hmm.
So you listen to sitars and other Indian instruments, tambours and so on, and you listen to the tone quality, and that tone quality has information in it. It's not just the note,
mm-hmm.
and it's not just the scale, and it's not just the rhythm that you're playing and volume and dynamics and space. It's the actual tone quality of plucking or wind instrument or whatever you're playing. You play a certain note, and generally with a very masterful musician, all they need to do is play one note and they'll get your attention because of what it took them to produce a tone that beautiful. It's a little different with synthesizers because a lot of components can be missed that are there in the acoustic instruments as far as this aspect. You know, you hear...
It's like the life force or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Think of, you know, different violinists that you've heard. Isaac Stern or Ichak Perlman, for instance, they have differences in their tone. They could play the same piece, or flute players like James Galway or Ron Paul,
mm-hmm.
for instance, different tone quality, and there's a different soul there, and both of them, they've all mastered these instruments, and they all have beautiful tone qualities, exceptional in the world they're in. They're at the top of what that is,
mm-hmm.
but there are different soul signatures that come through in those musicians,
mm.
and that in addition to the general timbre of a well-played flute.
So you're saying, when you say soul signature, you're saying that the person like you who's actually delivering the music brings his own soul in
mm-hmm.
as well and his own intention.
Yeah, it's in the music. One of the musicians I'm recording with saw some of my handwritten music and remembered when he was a student of mine 20 years ago what my music, handwritten music looked like. Instantly, he spotted it. Says, "Oh, there's a Randy Masters signature. I see that."
Yeah. Great.
Yeah, it's fun. You know, yeah. It has a certain look to it, a different piece than he maybe have ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a look to it. That it's in there.
It's a look to the way the music is written.
Yeah, in my mm-hmm. and how I make the notes and what my penmanship or pencilmanship, you know, all that looks like on paper.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see that in a lot of printed music.
Interesting.
There are patterns there that one can derive soul patterns in digitally printed music or typed. But when you handwrite it, there's a special signature as well. So even just writing it, not only playing it. So I'm, you know, working with all, it's a unified field, so all of these things are related.
Right. Yeah, that's a huge subject. I wondered if you could give us a sample, and I'm maybe being naive about this, but my last show, the show that I just completed before this, was about transitions of all kinds.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if you could pick perhaps a sound or several sounds from the tuning forks that might resonate with such a thing, or is that how you ever pick it?
Sure. For instance, here's one. I brought out a set tuned to sacred geometry measurements.
Okay.
And if I play a 1,000 hertz tuning fork, which is an octave of the note that all humans that Don Estes has analyzed their voice with a computer, supercomputer, and analyzed their voice prints,
okay,
has found that everybody resonates to 125 hertz or 250 hertz B sharp.
Everybody does?
Everybody he's tested.
Hmm.
Everybody he's tested.
Hmm.
Now, there may be people that have something else going on.
So what does that say? Does that say that's a part of our common denominator as a species?
Yeah, because when you octavize it down, you get 7.8125, which is one of the Schumann frequencies, Schumann resonance. So basically, I think that we're all linked into the Earth's brainwaves, and that's why that tone shows up.
And that's a little like why your handwritten notes have your signatures. It's the same kind of thing, really, isn't it? It's your life.
I'm linked into.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I also developed my penmanship over the years, music copy, and I taught music calligraphy, too, as one of the subjects. And
I thought it was your Schumann resonance harmonizing with that.
So I think, you know, we're all linked into that common frequency. When the Earth's Schumann resonance changes, all of us, including all the critters, insects, reptiles, mammals.
Interesting.
All shift.
Yeah. Isn't that nice to hear that? I mean, isn't that sort of...
I do. I'm looking for common denominators. What are the things
that
link people together? There's lots of things, you know.
Yeah.
So if I play...
But there are differences we need to value as well. Okay, let's go.
So if I play this 1,000 hertz note, this would represent, if you put a bunch of the platonic forms together, and I make wind chimes with these frequencies in them. That's on my website, sacredwindchimes.com. I make these same frequencies I'm going to play in wind chimes.
Okay.
And the purpose is to hear in sound how the special relationships of certain forms fit together. I have them hanging in the house here.
Okay.
You know, like there'll be a octahedron in the, and then outside of that is a two tetrahedrons, and they're inside a cube, and then the cube has a dodecahedron around it, and then the dodecahedron sends out these five-sided pyramids in golden mean ratio. It sends out 12 of them. You connect the dots, and you get an icosahedron out on the outside. So these are the ratios that I'm actually going to demonstrate, the way these are what they call nested together. That's a part of sacred geometry, but sacred geometry is full of special relationships. That's what it's built on.
But you're saying that you're going to
do it with sound.
Yes, okay, good.
So I've taken the exact numbers of the geometric proportions, and I'm doing them as hertz, cycles per second.
Excellent. So now, this is the one that everyone shares, right?
Yeah, this is a high octave. Now, I'm addressing your question about transition.
I know. I'm playing.
Okay. So.
We're all very experimental, aren't we?
So if that 1,000 hertz represented in this cluster of these platonic forms, the edge of a cube, when you send out the transition will be phi times that, or 1.618 times that.
Okay.
We'll send out the length of the edges on these five-sided pyramids that are attached to each face of a dodecahedron, typically. But here I'm showing the basic phi ratio, which this is about using this edge of a cube as one and phi. Here's the other one all by itself, so you can hear that first before I put them together. So that's 1,618 hertz. That's as far as I've taken it on this one. Now,
that hit me right across here, right?
Did it?
Yep,
wow.
That's great. I liked it.
So now you can play them together, and they form a minor six interval. If I played it in a certain rhythm, I could play the first 10 notes of the song, the theme from the movie Love Story.
Oh, really?
It could be played with these two notes.
Excellent, yeah.
That's really fun. So the transition, or I could play the length of the dodecahedron. Let's say that's the entity here on Earth. and we're saying that that person is a dodecahedron per minute, 12-sided.
Okay.
And that would be 618 hertz. I'll play that.
This is our person in transition?
This is before they transition.
Okay, before. Oh, my.
And then we play the 1,000 hertz frequency with that. And that will be the transition zone,
okay,
which is the sides of this five-sided pyramid that's coming off of the dodecahedron. So what I just played is an edge length of the dodecahedron.
Okay.
And now, this may sound very wild for a lot of you, and, wow, is this guy into his head in math? And I'm saying, no. This is our birthright to understand these relationships, because the whole universe is made out of these relationships. And this is the type of thing that should be taught in music schools and in math classes and in geometry classes and so on, so that we understand the natural laws of the universe.
But if we're listening to you right now and don't get it all in our heads, we can get it all in our frequencies, in our bodies, can we not?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm doing this with the sound. It makes a different point than the one where you just look at the forms or hold the forms and play with them. Tactile and visual, you know, and the energies that come off these shapes is one thing. It's something else to hear these relationships. And now here's the 1,000 with it. The love story again.
It is, yeah. It sounds a bit more minor, is it?
It's the same relationship. Exactly. Now when you make it through the transition zone, then we'll go from the 1,000 up to the 1,618. The 1,618 will be that place that you may arrive at in that next stage. Not the ultimate destination, because this goes on forever.
So are we all feeling a huge transitional movement going on? I hope so. Ah.
And now I could play all three together. I'll strike them all. You get the idea.
I do.
So philosophically, I'm using the one ratio in the universe that does go on forever, the golden mean, the phi ratio, and that fractal is what connects all of life and connects us beyond here through this phi ratio. It's all in all of the living forms. It's in the rotations of the planets. It's in proportions of the segments of our body. And that's why certain sculptures of the human body look especially beautiful, is because they understand the canon of proportions and knew how to use these ratios in their sculpture.
Well, I really understand that, because we just absolutely respond, don't we, to the beautiful.
Yeah.
What about in transition time? Would you play those if someone was passing, to do the more extreme transition?
Well, there are people, my partner Jan Zircone has done a lot of work, and we're working on this recording together, this new one, the sound healing recording together. I didn't talk about the vocal part of that yet, but she's worked a lot with people in transition, hospice types of things, and consulted people who do that work. And so there are instruments that are appropriate, harp, voice, soft things. Bell tones are also tones that people who are starting to work in those states and loosen up their connection to this density hear bell tones and things. So as long as the tones are beautiful, generally softer, not jolting.
Jarring and split between.
And there's a certain level of beauty that helps people. So now if somebody's holding on and they need to let go, there's ways to use drumming, for instance, and certain patterns in the music to help them break up the patterns that they're attached to.
Well, can you explain drumming?
Well, one of the things that happens with drumming, I have friends who do drum patterns to the I Ching.
Oh, wow.
June Steiner and her husband, Peter Lyon, they have a whole drum group that takes all of the trigrams and the hexagrams of the I Ching as long and short notes, which could be translated into eighth notes or quarter notes. And they put rhythms together, and they do all of these special quality things with these I Ching patterns, and they beat at a certain frequency that can take people into theta brain states. So in other words, the rhythm that you're playing can be so specific that after you drum for a certain period of time, the brain goes into entrainment with the rhythms, and they'll go into these different brain states.
Hmm.
So they use them, and they've played in hospitals, and they've helped a lot of people get in touch with things through the rhythm. Now, that's a little more harsh than a harp in a certain way, but they know how to do that. They know how to take, in a shamanic way, to take the drum patterns and play them and help people where they are and help them negotiate more with and contend with what they have to face next.
Mm-hmm.
If they're resisting that, you know, that it might help them loosen up their resistance and let go or develop a trust so they can flow with their natural process.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like somebody's driving them faster than what their soul is. I think it's a matter of negotiating the consciousness and the soul and the body and the patterns that people are attached to, their stories generally.
So how do you tune into people to find out? I know they're doing the drumming and you're not. You're doing...
Well, I work with drumming, but I don't do it in hospice. But I studied world rhythms from all over the world. So I studied these rhythmic patterns, and I know things to do with the rhythmic patterns in composition that you can dance to it and also have a healthy impact in addition to the fun and dancing.
Oh, wow. That's
by
great.
Having certain tempos, certain combinations of rhythms that are played. And
are you following your intuition and your guidance and your intention?
Yeah. And there's a lot of world cultures that have absolute mastery. They know why they play the rhythm they play, what they're doing with it, and what they intend to happen for those who are dancing and listening or doing rituals or whatever to the drumming. So they're very aware. Not that they always tell everybody without certain indoctrinations and such, but in studying those things, they have considerable mastery over the understanding of archetypal rhythms and how to hold a particular rhythm so that will help somebody hold them in a trance state. If they're channeling, they can be suspended in that state while the rhythm is playing. And then they have a different psychology for each of the different instruments, metal instruments like bells and gongs, skin instruments like drums that have skins for the heads on the drums, and also log drums and things such, rattles and what rattles do. I mean, there's three kinds, and wooden sticks that you click together. They call them click sticks. So those four components are components that a lot of sonic shamans from the ancient cultures know how to work with. Whenever you hear them, listen, are they working with wood? Are they working with the wood element? Are they working with metal? And of course, the metal, you know, is developed through the fire element. So they understand how the different elements of wood and metal and skins, different kind of animal skins and such, all contribute toward the tone qualities in the shamanic experience. And then the American Indians use their rattles in their ceremonies when they're doing healing as a way to create a zero-point energy to suspend the person in a grace state where their story is not preventing them from healing. So for a while, there's a zero point where if they choose to heal, they can go through something and remarkable changes can take place in short order if that's in the cosmic picture.
That sort of makes sense when you say they go into zero point. So they're not resisting, they're not fighting it, they're not living into their consciousness.
And their patterns that they've adapted to and been conditioned with and hung on to and reacted to are temporarily suspended so that a new paradigm is available for a shift.
Now tell me, so if you're going to go in and do some healing work with someone, well, that's not your intention right now, is it? You don't do a lot of one-on-one or do...
Well, I do that work, but it's mostly for spiritually proactive use of the sound. Not necessarily. My focus is not on symptoms.
Okay.
I know lots of people who are, and I advise people and give them information relative to things about that. But I'm really looking for those who want to be conscious about their evolution and take their progression seriously and work on it.
So when you find...
Like the Kabbalah that I was talking about. See, that was all about... That wasn't about the symptoms that any one person had in that class. It was all about where do we want to go with our consciousness? How can we use sound and intent and a certain amount of ritual and the understanding in the Kabbalah of all these different qualities and the 22 main paths of the Kabbalah. How do we work with that with sound? I've discovered a way to work with it with sound. So that's what we're doing, as opposed to somebody has got a burn or something and they want to heal up the scar tissue or something. You know, that's a completely different approach.
And so you work mostly with groups then?
And individuals.
Well, you do.
Yeah.
So I teach
people how to, with tuning forks and the sound tubes, how to get with the program of getting with the sound current.
Hmm.
How to ride the
so
sound
So how do you
current.
Start? So I come in to see you. How do you start? Do you start hearing things? Do you intuitive? You're very intuitive, I know.
Yeah, and I talk to people and listen to their sound of their voice and what they're saying and what I get from what they're saying and what their intention is. And maybe somebody feels that their dream world, their third eye, isn't very open.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to open that more so they can get better insights and hear their guides better. So that's very exciting to work in that kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
So I can show them things to do, breathing things to do, visualizations, using tuning forks, coordinating all of that together to help open up a gland that's pretty atrophied in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But the pineal gland is really shut down compared to, as I've heard, it is in other ancient times when we had really large pineal glands and were very in touch with the cosmic blueprints. As that's gotten atrophied for various reasons, people don't use it. And they don't have full use of it.
I was
right
going to say it's from lack of use, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
lack of credibility.
Lack of use, exactly. So there's different ways that sound can greatly impact that. And sound can impact hormones and things. I have tuning forks that, well, you see, how do I work with somebody? Like, let's say that you can also, if they had trouble with their serotonin levels, I can know what the sound frequencies of that are. And you can work with the sound.
Well, can you give us some of that right now?
Here's one.
Everybody needs some more.
Yeah, here's one that's 147 hertz. It's a low octave of the blue light color that has been studied and proven to affect serotonin.
Hmm. Oh, wonderful.
I don't know how well that picked up, and there's a lot of overtones that came off that tuning fork.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Because I used a long fork without weights on it so that you could get a lot of overtones. I have the same fork with weights where you mainly hear the main fundamental. It's like a.
These are the weights that have like a round thing
on
the end of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's like a low E-flat note.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a very auspicious note, and it's got a magical number to it as well. There's a lot of different things. Correspondences in that note.
Hmm.
The question is, you know, different ways how to use it. So I work with, and I'm looking for, how do we advance with sound as a species? So in getting people to meditate with the sound current and close their eyes in a meditation and go within and find that place where the sound, listen to their own nervous system, listen to the hum that their nervous system may have. That quiets a lot of things down. And learn how to get with the sound current. That's what I call getting with the bigger picture.
And is this a stillness meditation?
Mm-hmm. And visualizing, and I believe in the ancient teachings about the sound current are that you can get all the way home to wherever that is on the sound current,
mm-hmm.
even farther than where light takes people. So a lot of the gurus in different cultures, once they got into working with sound, that was their work for the rest of their life. They didn't go back to previous things.
Mm, really?
They realized what the sound could do and stayed with it and taught that. And so it's very interesting to pursue that, meditating on this. Anybody can do this. And there's no cultural...
And how do we do it again? We just go into a quiet meditation,
mm-hmm.
maybe with a mantra or not?
You can, you know, those are different ways to wind down and get... But mainly the idea is to go as deep inside and kind of turn oneself inside out and go in there and just and be listening and listen more and more. See what you hear. And a lot of people hear a certain hum, and when their nervous system is keyed up, there is a hum.
Hmm.
That is their nervous system that they're hearing. And so there's a lot of dimensions of this. And then as they're working with the sound current to trust it and learn the trust in it and let it take them to where they need to go, it's not going to take them to an inappropriate place, their natural sound current, because it's connected to their own higher selves. And it's not like they're going to go someplace that they don't belong or shouldn't go. It's not like that. Some meditations can take people to places that aren't appropriate. It doesn't mean that every meditation is the correct or right meditation.
What meditation can... Well, I don't think I want to go off into that track,
no,
right?
No, but I'm just saying that, you know, it exists. Mm-hmm. You know, just like people making a difference doesn't mean they're making a positive difference.
That's right.
You know,
they might be just disruptive.
They may be doing some... Exactly.
So let's do... Oh, I wanted to talk to you about vocal. I mean, the tuning forks and the voice can be used similarly. Can you use the voice to do acupuncture?
Well, it doesn't... I'm not sure.
Have it finally tuned
with it. A tuning fork, I have people sing the tone and internalize the tone.
Okay.
That's really fun to do, to put a tuning fork on a certain point on the body or around the body or near it, and then sing that tone along with the tuning fork. Gets people proactive with what's happening. They're not passive. They're actively engaged in listening to the sound and trying to do their best to match it and do various exercises with how they sing, what kind of syllables they might use, and what they visualize when they're toning. So the voice is an ultimate liberator.
Hmm.
It doesn't mean you have to be a singer.
Right.
Because it's not like you're singing for entertainment, and you're not singing for other people's approval. At this level, it's to release and connect, and hopefully you learn to go to a place where you let go of the judgment so you can use your voice for what it needs to do.
And that's like toning or...
Any of those type of things, mm-hmm. Right. Exactly, as opposed to thinking, now you're going to go up and entertain with it. I mean, some people do, but on a primary healing application of the voice, it's to let go of enough judgment so that you can let your voice do something that you don't think it can do, or you might not want it to do, but it needs to do.
Hmm.
From the right place in you, that if you get out of the way, you all of a sudden discover that your voice wants to do this or that. It's not being run by the mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really much simpler than that and outside of that mental control framework.
Hmm.
But, you know, you can use the mind and you can focus the mind and you can use it like a lens and have a specific visualization of something that you want to do. So I think sound in all kinds of situations and the silence between the sound is a magical zone.
Hmm.
Like in rhythm, when you strike a note and you play that note again, like on a drum or on anything, what is the space between the striking the note? That's a big part.
Hmm.
The space before the striking the note, the space between, and the space when you strike the next note. Those are all parts of the consciousness, not just when you're hearing it. And so what sound does is it creates like these pillars and the zone, like 11-11s and all those pillars. Mm-hmm. A couple of tones together create other combinations, some in different tones. There. So when you play two tuning forks, for instance, you get the difference of their pitches and you get the summation of their pitches and the two pitches that you're playing.
Mm.
So there's a wherever two or more gather, there's more happening. There's a synergy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, also, the silences between the overtones, the certain overtones and harmonics fade out. You know, you're getting a different tonal picture.
Mm.
As I played these tuning forks, certain overtones were very high in the beginning, and then as the tone was sustaining, the tone quality was going through some subtle changes. As certain overtones would drop out of the audio range.
Mm.
So the silence is a big part of it. So part of the sound current is you get quiet enough to listen. And there are sounds, some...
And that's back to being in the stillness so you actually can hear your own
right. Your
own sound.
And there are sounds that one can hear in the usual sense of hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's inner sounds that nobody in the room could hear, but they could be loud to you if you get quiet enough.
Hmm.
So there's audible and inaudible sounds.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm.
And our consciousness is very capable of dealing with it beyond what the normal scientific version of our hearing is about.
So this sounds like it's a core issue for sound, not just sound healing, resonant living.
Yeah. Yeah, and I develop products, sound tools, for instance, and geometric tools, other things that are all about certain special relationships, certain special combinations of tones that, you know, tuning waterfalls, for instance, is something I like, that whole idea.
Mm.
Not only hearing the waterfall, but what's it tuned to? And you can place rocks and waterfalls in such a way that the pitch when the water strikes the rocks is different.
Lots of Japanese gardens are
full of tuned waterfalls. That's a big deal.
And you're actually able to name the frequency of the and the tune and the tone?
Or, if you don't know the name, you listen till it feels great to you.
Like you're really hearing
the music.
And
you listen to streams, and you listen to what is the tone that stream has, you know, and you get into that listening like that. You listen to bird calls, and you listen to them in a different way, and insects.
Mm. Yes, I know. I've heard that one with the crickets.
Slowed down.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
so amazing.
It is.
Unfortunately, we have to say goodbye, and I wonder if you could please give your, how can people get hold of you, and also to mention Jan Sircone, who's a pretty powerful
yeah.
sound healer herself. We could talk about her website or how people can get on her
yeah,
newsletter.
Yeah, hers is Music for Joy and Healing,
mm-hmm.
and her center, Song and Spirit Center in Novato is 415-506-0108, and she's working a lot with the voice and other rituals and such.
It's soundandhealing.com?
No, her Music for Joy and Healing is her.
Musicforjoyandhealing.com?
And then I have, my company is Resonant Living, but my website is universalsong.net, and my email is universalsong@yahoo.com.
Great.
And my phone number is 831-662-2594.
I'd like to come to one of your workshops. They're really amazing.
We're doing one next Saturday and Sunday in Novato from 10 to 5 each day, all on sound healing.
Oh, really? Is it all kinds of sound healing?
All kinds, with a voice, with sound tubes, with tuning forks, different procedures, different sounds and motions and exercises, all a real introduction to how to jump into the sound current and work with it.
Great. If you forget it all, it's universalsong.net is a great way to get hold of Randy Masters and also get hold of your own sound prints and your ability to heal and live resonantly. This is Veronica Entwistle, and I think we've used up our time. If you'd like to be in touch with me, it's Veronica@VeronicaEntwistle, no H in Entwistle.com. And if you have any feedback on our wonderful Paradigm Shifter, I'd love to hear from you. On Thursday night, I'm going to be talking with Jackie Salvitti on ET Healing and Explorations in Consciousness. And next Tuesday is Galexis, who's a channeled coalescence of beings through Ginger Metro. And that's going to be very exciting on Paradigm Shifters. Thank you so much for listening. And I want to send everybody, maybe you want to
hit a nice chord.
Yeah, I think we'll do a nice other kind of transitional.
I'll play a nice octave here. So,
all right.
For the male and the female being an octave apart.
Okay. Oh, wonderful. Much love, many blessings, and we'll see you on Thursday night or next week.